And you're listening to Pop Health Week on the Blog Talk Radio and Affiliate Networks. This episode is brought to you by Health Innovation Media. And welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the producer and co-host of the show. And in the virtual studio today are my colleagues, Fred Goldstein, principal co-host and co-founder of Pop Health Week, and Douglas Goldstein, the e-futurist, a principal co-host at Health Innovation Media, who joins us for our periodic and typically month-end roundups. Greetings, guys.
Greetings. It's great to talk to you. Get the show launched in 2017.
Happy New Year.
That's it. And that is our first broadcast of the new year. We did our holiday year-end wrap-up month-end last month. So for those of you not familiar with Fred, he's a veteran healthcare executive and the president of Accountable Health LLC, a Jacksonville-based Florida consulting firm. Fred serves on the editorial board of the Journal of Population Health Management and the advisory board of Care Innovations Validation Institute. Fred's a past chair and former board member of the Population Health Alliance. He is known on Twitter as @FSGoldstein. Douglas Goldstein, known as eFuturist, @eFuturist on Twitter, is an innovator in digital health, precision medicine, and population health. He specializes in applying the right mix of mobile, social, gamification, and big data analytics, including emerging technologies for improved performance and outcomes. As the eFuturist, Doug delivers the latest insights on health transformation through innovation, collaboration, and leadership. My background includes thought leadership and strategy consulting for hospitals, health systems, and physician-led ventures. I publish and principally author ACOWatch.com, HealthInnovationMedia.com, and PrecisionMedicine.Center. If your hospital, health system, physician venture, or healthcare conference is looking for social media marketing support, including digital media content development, curation, engagement, or amplification, ping me on Twitter via @2HealthGuru or email Greg with two G's at healthinnovationmedia.com. Today's show is another exploration of the emergence of what has been deemed Trump Care, with all of its key threads, including the nomination of Representative Tom Price to lead the Department of Health and Human Services, in addition to what can be stitched together from the legislative, journalistic, and social media communities weighing in on the matter. And with that introduction, and before I get to it, let's offer a full disclosure on the nature of the commentary you will hear during these broadcasts, at least on the Trump Care portion of the conversation. We have representatives from the full ideological spectrum here. From the right is my colleague, Fred Goldstein, while I will opine from the left side of the spectrum, and squarely in the middle, and our Washington insider will be Douglas Goldstein. So having said that, gentlemen, let's get to it. So Fred, you're up. What can you tell us? What have you been seeing? What's caught your attention, and what can you make of it?
Well, first, let me just say that poor Doug, I guess, gets it in both ears, so sitting squarely in the middle. But I think it's been interesting to watch, because what we now have is the rhetoric is sort of turning into, well, now we actually got to do something. And I think we can all agree that there are some things in the bill that seem to be good, like no pre-existing conditions and, insurance through 26. While we clearly have issues with the bill around costs and actually getting even more people insured because of some of the pricing things. So in the last couple of weeks, it's now coming time to put the rubber to the road. And what you're seeing now is, obviously, there appears to be a difference between the legislative and incoming executive branch about repeal and replace. Are we repealing and replacing it? Are we repealing it and then we got to figure something out and replace it? Or are we going to just tweak it? I think it's been an interesting conversation to watch. I just don't know that they're on the same page yet, and I'm not sure that they'll get to the same page, and that's a little disconcerting, because at the end of the day, as I think CBO came out and said, we're going to lose millions of people if you repeal it. Well, obviously, if you repeal it without a replacement, they all drop. So there's got to be something done there, and the incoming president has said, we're going to do something. We are going to have a replacement in place, but I haven't seen what that is, nor has anybody else. And the question is, how much do they put on paper before they do something to repeal the bill or repeal pieces of the bill? So that's interesting. Go ahead.
What's going to happen is it will be repealed but not replaced for somewhere between 2 and 3 years. So it'll be repealed in name, so they can say, we repealed it, but then there will be a progressive legislative process to address which parts that, because this is changing law. And even though the Republicans control everything, it doesn't mean it goes fast. It may go faster than if we had some balance in the power, but it's still, there's regulatory parts that can be changed and there's priorities that can be shifted. But what has been implemented is a law that has been on the books for 8 years that the entire industry has implemented. So and you're going to hear it first. This is really about co-presidents Ryan and McConnell and how they want to respond to their constituencies and the people in acting, you know. So if the Democrats had taken over, it would have been, we've got to fix ACA. Well, the branding is repealing and fixing, repealing and replacing. It's all fixing the elements. So I think cooler heads are in Congress, and they know that they have to live with the electorate. And frankly, they're at the risk of losing millions and millions of voters and support for what they achieve. So I think the responsible, the people responsible to the people, the elected politicians, are going to move.
I might take issue with that, Doug, because what I think is happening is you heard the president come out and say, we will have a replacement in place when we repeal it. And the folks in the Congress are saying, no, we're going to repeal it, and then we'll figure it out, or we'll have small pieces we've figured out and try to figure out the rest later. So if anything, I think at this point, at least the latest statement by President-elect Trump is, we will have a replacement when we repeal it. Is that not what was said?
I did not see that specific quote. I know that the legislative branch controls writing the legislation, not the president. And so they're going to move through a process. So whether it's repealed in name only, I think it's likely to be repealed in name only with the details to be worked out.
So did you hear, I think it was Susan Collins, who yesterday said that, well, maybe we can be, is almost like top, you know, what is it called? Ad hoc thought processes. Well, maybe we can let the states who want to keep the Affordable Care Act keep it, and those who don't can kind of go back to the drawing board. And I don't know if you've heard anything differently, but reinstitute what I consider to be hollow and empty Republican talking points, block grants to the state, risk pools, buying insurance over state lines, which always amuses when you think, if you don't have critical mass in a marketplace, let's say you're in Texas and you want to write business, individual small group in Louisiana, if you think you can have a footprint in Louisiana as a Texas health plan or vice versa, that somehow you're going to get a health plan or insurance carrier, HMO, PPO, whatever, who's going to go in there and extract most favored nations rates from a payer in a particular geography with a light footprint. That's mythology. There's no economics that supports that. So when you hear buying across insurance lines, what it really is, code speak for junk insurance, because you tag that with, well, eliminate the mandate. Yeah, let's get out of these minimum health benefit crap, because if I'm a guy, why do I need to get tagged for birth control? And, you know, on and on. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So,
well, they're going to run
Doug, I want to come back
side to the House. Greg, they're going to run into the Congressional Budget Office, and they're, both sides can't grow the deficit. So So what's going to happen in this process is as the costs of an action get calculated, it's going to change the process. So rhetoric's one thing, but when rhetoric hits the budget analysis, that's why there's a number of steps in this process.
Sure. And just to get back to that first topic, the headline in the Washington Post from yesterday or the day before, the 16th, Donald Trump may have just destroyed the Republican effort to repeal Obamacare because he said in a weekend interview that he's nearing completion of a plan to replace the signature law. So the plan would be in place when they did the repeal, and obviously that's different than what the Congress is doing.
Right.
Well, I like
the overall.
Go ahead.
On the overall time, the overall challenge you're going to have is that Trump has also said that his appointees should do what they think is right. And he's stayed away from, quote, his version of the bully pulpit. He's stayed away. He's using bully as bully, not as President Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, used it as bully as awesome. This is a platform to do good. You know, President Trump will be doing it to bully people to his way. And I frankly think the people he's asked to serve will not be bullied because they're professionals. They've been responsible. They've been lawyers. They've been in. They have their decisions, but they're also mature, legislative, experienced folks who have responsibility to the people who elected them.
And that, I guess, goes to your idea of the co-presidents, McConnell and Ryan, because, I mean, you know, there's the bully pulpit and there's the Trump style, which, as far as I can tell, is say whatever comes into your mind whenever it occurs to you and don't worry about any kind of consequences. But, you know, the CBO, which you referenced, Doug, their analysis shows the number of people, and I quote, who are uninsured would increase by 18 million in the first new plan year following enactment of the bill. Later, the elimination of the ACA's expansion of Medicaid eligibility and of subsidies for insurance purchased through the ACA marketplaces, that number would increase to 27 million and then to 32 million in 2026. That's political
suicide. I believe, and that is that number is based on CBO only does what your bill is doing. There is no thing in the CBO analysis about a replacement. It's just
but this is
you've appealed it. Of course, everybody loses their insurance.
But I think this is the HR's 3762 Restoring Americans Healthcare Freedom Reconciliation Act of 2015, which is authored principally by Tom Price. Tom Price, who is Donald Trump's nominee to head the Department of Health and Human Services, he has no love lost for the department, Medicare, or Medicaid. He's a non-participant in Medicaid. well, okay, there you go. The art of the possible. What do you think, Doug?
I think he's going to run into the fact that we have laws, regulation, and a bureaucracy, and he may be able to slow down the rollout of at least CMS's version of pay for performance and quality and value, but the private sector is not turning back, and they're going to run into the legislators are going to run into the constituencies, which are both the people, but also the business interests. They've just spent the last eight years retooling. They're not going back to fee for service.
I mean, we've seen some of this. Is it enough? Is any of this that's being enough to lower any costs? And let me just make this a little more, down to, because at the end of the day, it is about people. It's about people and their health insurance. So, the last three people I know who got insurance through this, one of them is early retired with his wife, did very well. Insurance was a fortune, so they were trying to find a super high deductible, like a plan with a $20,000 out of pocket, because it was just so expensive. And the second one was a young kid who was 28, and he has chosen over the last couple of years, I just don't buy it; it's too expensive. And the third one was a family in California, in which the two parents and three kids saw their insurance go from $20,000 to $24,000 with his small business. So it's something's got to be done about costs, and maybe that's where the bully pulpit should go.
Well, the whole reason, one of the major reasons premiums went up is the risk pool diversified, but not as fast as people predicted. But the subsidies to the health plans was the last Congress, the last Senate, led by Rubio, basically defunded the subsidies to the insurance companies as the risk pool diversified. So the young 28-year-old who says, oh, $200 or more a month is too expensive to me with my $5,000 deductible, he spends more on beer. It doesn't mean they're thinking correctly.
Yeah.
When $200 a month or $100 a month, $150, that's a deal. But he doesn't have context to make that decision.
Is that really a deal when you allow the seniors to have such a small adjustment and really rack in the variation in rates between risk pools?
Well, so Fred, don't go there.
The kids were picking up an excessive amount.
Well, yeah, but no, don't go there, because if you really want to contrast that, you're talking about the Medicare program versus what's happening in the exchanges. Doug is right on. You know, this was absolute subterfuge to defund the risk corridors. Hey, you create a brand new marketplace through these exchanges. You have no underwriting history, and God knows what percent of that total are people who have been uninsured for years, if not decades. So the idea was, have a risk corridor, let's buffer this. And then the Republicans defund that, and they say, well, look at these egregious premium increases. This is the failure of Obamacare. No, Obamacare included the buffering effect of these risk corridors. Now go to the Medicare Advantage side. Look at what's happening basically in co-payments and cost sharing.
Let me ask you something about that. So, and I agree with you. I think that was a bad move. But if you defunded the dollars that went to the health plan, that just means, so what they had to do was pick up the dollars somewhere else. But at the end of the day, people are still paying for that. It was somebody's money going to go in to fund that. It was either the government's or somebody else's. So there was no cost control in this thing. And I think the providers took advantage of it.
Agreed.
Well,
agreed.
Here's the other thing. There's no cost control in fee for service. And
yeah,
frankly, this, we're talking a human problem that can't be solved by we live in a consumer society. We get upset when people eat too much and drink too much because it causes obesity and diabetes and all these things. The fundamental challenges here are social, not healthcare policy.
No. I agree. There is a piece of that that is social, and there is a huge piece of that that is provider and payer led. It's the idea of, well, we can't negotiate with drug companies on their pricing. We can't send people out of state, out of the country, to get treatment that would be one-fifth the cost of providing in the United States for Medicaid. And things like that that I think have been set in place by the industry themselves to protect it. It continues to grow. It's the ever-growing trough in this country that will consume everything you put in front of it and more.
Right. So Romney Care as proxy for the Affordable Care Act. The difference there is obviously one, a small state, but nonetheless a more integrated cost control health reform package through, quote, Romney Care. All of the provisions around that are basically staggered and staged in the Affordable Care Act, because coming down with a footprint on the cost was just politically impossible, infeasible, bottom line. The light footprint through, you know, APMs, you know, ACOs and bundled payments and this and that, just toe in the water, where you get some demonstration in some quarters in some markets where they actually create the kind of savings that the law intended. But relative to the total spend, it's a drop in the bucket.
Yep. And so what I would hope comes out of this, and it's great because people are actually now having to deal with real issues, and I think, you know, as the CBO weighs in, you're starting to get some real stuff, is at the end of the day, we got to come up with something that works. There are people that need coverage. We should get people covered. That should be just a universal goal. The question is, how do you do that? But how do you also not get taken advantage of in the process, which is, I think, what's happened in healthcare for years. The industry's taken advantage of.
Yeah. Well, how does Trump do that? Because he's advocating for universal care, which I completely agree with. but he's disassembling the very law that puts in some scalable fashion a pathway together towards universal coverage. So how does he get there out of the gate?
Right. I think what you've got to do is look at, what in the bill was good. And there are clearly things in the bill that are good. And you ought to say, well, if we've got to meet a political constituency that says, oh, it's got to be repealed, that word repeal has to be in there. And what you've got to do is say, well, gosh, you know what? At 12 o'clock, we're going to do a repeal. And at 12.0001, we're going to put in place these provisions that we are good. And we're going to do this to control costs here, this to help providers here, this to look at the social determinants here, and actually put in place those other pieces that are needed to build upon what was correct but didn't do, ultimately have anything to help really drive the change we need in the industry to help control costs.
Sounds like a good solution, Fred, but I think it's not going to happen. As a society, we view healthcare as a product and service to be bought and sold. It is not a value. So universal coverage will never happen in this country as it has in every other developed country, Canada, whatever. Our population's too large, so there's no other developed country that has universal care at our size. And number two, it's a product to be bought and sold. It's not as we view education. Every child in America gets the right to a free and appropriate education. We may not execute it well equally in all places, but it is part of our social compact. Healthcare is not.
Right.
Doug, I want to come at you with two questions then. One is, you kind of have an inside seat at a trophy health system in the Northern Virginia area. What percent of their revenue is capitated?
Less than 5%.
Okay.
Probably in the 10% range.
Right. So for those of you who can't read in between the lines, that says a lot about where the institutional commitment is, not just in Northern Virginia, but the nation, where the health systems, the motivation, the incentives, alignment with doctors or disalignment with doctors in a common cause. It's just not there yet, you know, so maybe you're 5% cap.
Well, it's less about institutional commitment. This is about every health plan. What I've appreciated is that every health plan, every medical device company, every provider, we get what we pay for. And what we have is an entire $300 trillion industry that is geared to do transactions. All of our training.
Did I hear you say we get what we pay for?
That's right. We get procedures.
I thought the Institute of Medicine now said that 30% of healthcare is waste. So that's
okay. Waste means jobs. And so what we pay for is volume, so we get volume. That's what I'm saying.
So it's a job bill.
Right.
Yeah.
But all of our systems are created for transactions, not value and quality delivery. Because the cost of a device or a staple or a pharmaceutical, everybody's rewarded for doing more.
I agree, and that's one of my concerns, actually, in looking through what the nominee Price has said is, you know, he doesn't like some of these new payment methodologies. Well, if you're going to do fee-for-service, there ain't no way in heck we're ever going to control this. You've got to rapidly move down that change in reimbursement methodologies. And in essence, I think it almost will take a bully pulpit to force the industry to change.
Okay,
well,
let me come back to you.
Look, this is what the future says. You're going to see industry change. You're not, the government's going to slow down the move to value, but private sector commercial is going to continue down that road.
And you think this is a policy position of Tom Price as well, to slow down the value portion of the agenda?
He's openly stated that, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's unpack what that means. That means if you're not talking about capitation or prospective payment, you're talking about bundles. And what do bundles do? Bundles de-silo the silos by creating Pit Cruz from Cowboys. And he comes from a background as an orthopedic surgeon, which according to MedPage Today, Compensation Survey 2016, is the highest paid specialty. I don't know how long he's been in the Congress and therefore, quote, out of active practice. But this guy had he comes from the I Got Mine Club, you're on your own, okay? So he's not someone who empathizes with the Medicaid population, the uninsured. You know, I'm sure he would be a fierce advocate towards the disintermediation of the healthcare financing and delivery to the point that you have basically a series of direct practices and then a whole layer of catastrophic health insurance underwriters around this, you know, hey, I'm disintermediating this bureaucracy known as HHS and CMS, and the way I'm doing it is to blow it up, and I'm going to pump in, you know, these direct practice models layered into a catastrophic health insurance scenario. That's where I think he's going, and that may have some merit, but that doesn't get the universal coverage that Trump's talking about.
No, I think the only way we can get to universal coverage is to actually take the costs out and use those costs to cover more people, use those dollars to cover more people. And if, you know, at the end of the day, people got to take less. We just can't. We $3.2 trillion and growing. You know, and that is one of the concerns I have with the nominee is if you're not willing to move into these new payment structures. You know, and maybe that's why the AMA came out in support, I believe, is it protects the docs, which is fine to a point. You know, you want the doctors to be practicing the best possible medicine and be, you know, appropriately compensated, but it can't be huge. It can't be this crazy stuff we're experiencing now.
Right. Prematurely, I might add, the AMA came out. There might be some second thoughts about that. Mm-hmm. Well, look, how do you cut costs? Show me, you know, what is Rick Scott? The one thing he said that I've ever agreed with, I disagree with everything this man stands for. But he said, how do you get someone who wants to slash their revenue by 50%? You know, and no one's going to do that. So
remember, and you'll appreciate this because this may come from more from your side. I think, didn't Andy Slavitt say, you know, to the incoming president, you know, good luck going after getting that pharmacy price down. And I do remember on his website, he said, I want to allow importation. Well, the minute you allow that, I'll tell you, every one of those pharma manufacturers come running and drop their price.
Right. Yeah.
That's what you start doing.
And if
the other thing
Trump
they start doing is laying off people.
But if you're...
And frankly, and they drop back on their R&D. So basically, we drive the research and the pharmacological biohealth drug and delivery.
We're employing people that are costing other people the inability to have health insurance, which is impacting their health care. We got to get rid of that stuff.
Well, listen, I will say hail Trump if he allows Medicare, you know, undoes the statutory prohibition against Medicare contracting direct for drug prices. Whoopee-doo, that's a great idea. So, and the universal coverage thing, you know, to me that means single payer, you know, but I don't see that happening anytime soon in a Republican administration. So, any last thoughts,
Doug? Universal coverage in Germany.
Universal coverage, but he's not saying what you're going to be covered for. Could be that hangnail.
Yeah, there you have it. All right, guys, that's going to be our last insight today on today's broadcast. I want to thank my colleagues, Fred Goldstein and Douglas Goldstein, for their time and insights today. Do follow Doug on the web at www.efuturist.net and on Twitter by @efuturist and Fred at www.accountablehealthllc.com and on Twitter by FS Goldstein. So for my two colleagues, this is Greg Masters. Follow me on Twitter by @2HealthGuru. Till we meet again on Pop Health Week, for Fred Goldstein, for Doug Goldstein, Greg Masters saying bye now.